The Racing Pod.
Looking ahead to this year's Galway races? Then don't miss The Racing Pod live with Off the Ball. Join me, John Duggan and Johnny Ward, alongside special guests Joe Canning, Barry Geraghty and Paul Nolan for an afternoon of racing insight, expert tips and plenty of crack. We'll be live from Mary Mullins Pub on Tuesday, July the 28th, previewing all the big action from Ballybrit with thanks to William Hill. Tickets are on sale now at offtheball.com/events. The Racing Pod live, July the 28th at Mary Mullins Pub. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
Off the Ball.
The Formula One Pod on Off the Ball. Brought to you by KitKat. Hit pause. Have a break. Have a KitKat.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the F1 Pod on Off the Ball. And as always, the F1 Pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by KitKat, bringing breaks to the fastest sport in the world. Hashtag have a break. So we're back in studio. Kira's back with me. How are you?
It's so good to be back. Thank you.
Fabulous. I mean, it feels like we're coming into the summer swing. Really, we're dead in the summer swing. And for me, it used to always be Belgium, the last race perhaps before the summer break.
And that's why I keep on thinking we're halfway through, but we are 9 races down and we still have 13 to go, and we do have a few more races to look forward to.
Yeah,
so I'm very excited to see what the next 2 races bring.
I know, so before the summer break we have Belgium to come this weekend, and then we have Hungary is the last one before our kind of break in August. And I feel like we would have felt like we're more into the season if we didn't have those 2 cancelled races back in the spring.
100%. And I feel like when we have the likes of Ferrari starting to really creep up behind Mercedes, it's making me think, I don't know what's happening here. George is like a front runner, and I was only saying to you before we started recording, even though George got P2 in Silverstone the other week, I feel like it was such a mute performance. He himself said, and I don't know how much of this is kind of mind games, he said, even though I got P2, I wasn't happy with this, and if I continue like this, I am not winning the championship. It is all eyes on Kimi. And I also think the excitement of Lewis, you cannot help but, you know, feel that as well creeping up in the background.
Definitely. I mean, I felt watching it that Silverstone was a very interesting, probably the most interesting race of the season so far in terms of a lot of storylines converging. Yeah. It's been building up to a point where we have now legitimate championship battles happening, races all throughout the midfield, all the way up. So as you said, we're almost kind of halfway into the season. We're going to be joined by Thomas Maher to talk about what we've seen so far, to talk about what's going to come. But for us to sort of begin, I mean, if we look at that race in Silverstone, in theory, as you said, should have been a great result for George Russell to switch the momentum, to say to himself, there's 2 more races before the summer break. It's time for me to push sort of a stamp on this championship. And I really didn't feel like that had happened.
Not at all. And I have to say, I feel like I thought for Silverstone, it was all the kind of, like you say, those different elements at play with the Max crash out, Antonelli's heartbreak. Even though this was Charles Leclerc's actually the first win since 2024, which is huge, I still feel like it was all about what went wrong for different drivers rather than what went right. Even Lewis losing his second place because of that safety car. I even feel like that was more prominent than the likes of Charles getting that win. Maybe that's my bias because I love Lewis so much. I'll fully say that.
But it almost felt to me that my instinctive reaction was to go, oh my God, a Ferrari strategy decision has cost them points again. This is something that we've seen season after season. But then when we saw the issues with the FIA deploying the safety car and deploying it in error, having to backtrack on that, you really can't blame Ferrari because it was the correct decision.
100%. And actually, this is something that I really want to discuss is I feel like there has to be a lot of conversations around the FIA right now because we have the likes of, you know, that was a stilted end. That was finished behind a safety car because of Max crashing out, you know, with around 10 laps to go and Antonelli's heartbreak. I just feel like that, and then we had the issue with a few races ago with Pierre Gasly getting his third place back off Isaac Hadjar way after the race had finished. That's more turmoil. And then we had the issues, which race, where we had the all the different penalties.
Penalties handed out.
And I just think it's been so messy. The regulations, messy. I feel like this has been real an administrative, you know, error of a year so far.
And that's what Silverstone I always thought was going to show, because it's a circuit that I think a lot of drivers going into this race weekend that we had 2 weeks ago now,
yeah,
felt this isn't a circuit that's going to suit the new regulations. And it sort of needed to be perfect if we wanted to have a perfect weekend. And despite the fact that we had a first Charles Leclerc win in 2 years and a George Russell, it didn't feel like a perfect weekend
for
anyone.
No, it really didn't.
So we're delighted to be joined by Planet F1 journalist Thomas Meyer to talk about Silverstone and then to look at where we are in F1 halfway through the season-ish and then what's going to come up. Thomas, how are you today?
I'm very well. I've literally just arrived to my accommodation here near Spa. I'm about 10 minutes drive away from Spa, but here now I'm just getting set up for the Belgian Grand Prix weekend.
But it's always a fan favourite in Belgium, which I'm going to want to talk about soon. But just before we go on to Belgium, I know that you do it kind of every week, about a winners and a losers from a Grand Prix. If you could give me from Silverstone a couple of weeks ago, your biggest winner and your biggest loser.
Well, I think in terms of actual performance, I think the big winner was obviously Charles Leclerc for Ferrari and Kimi Antonelli, even though the result might not have played out in Antonelli's favour. I think Antonelli was probably one of the big winners simply because he showed up again. George Russell, you know, yeah, there's the home advantage. You always say that a driver racing at home has that extra advantage of an extra tenth or two because of the crowd cheering him on. But even with that, Russell did not have the measure of Antonelli over the weekend. Yes, there's apparently a mechanical aspect to this. There's the whole mysterious brake issue that Russell appears to be suffering from throughout the British Grand Prix weekend. But Antonelli has the measure, and he's been doing this consistently throughout the European season. And if you think back to last year, that was where Antonelli really struggled in comparison to Russell. It was on the tracks that he knew already. He was overdriving, he was overthinking, and he just didn't produce the goods over the European season last year. This year, he is absolutely showing it, even if the circumstances of the individual weekends aren't always working out in his favour. As for Charles Leclerc, obviously, he won the race, and he was pretty much untouchable throughout. And we've seen Ferrari make big gains over recent weekends through their upgrades, through their development cycle. And we're starting to see the fruits of that. Lewis Hamilton came good, obviously, a couple of races ago in Barcelona. Charles, a little bit behind, maybe on trying to get to grips with the brakes. He said he hasn't been in a good place with the feeling of the car, but it's starting to come together for him. And at Silverstone, he took pole position. He controlled the race. He had Antonelli, under control for most of the race. We don't know how the strategy battle might have played out in those last few laps due to Antonelli having that issue. But Charles very much on it, and I would expect him now, if he has got that feeling back, he will be consistent throughout the European season. In terms of the big loser, I think it has to be Max Verstappen at the moment. Yes, there's been flashes of performance upswing as the upgrades were brought to the Red Bull in Austria, but by and large, that seems to be inconsistent. It's almost like Red Bull don't really understand the how to make the RB22 work. And as a consequence, we saw at Silverstone, Verstappen not really able to get in the battle at the front. And then, of course, there's the reliability issues that we're seeing. That rear wing issue that sent him flying off the road towards the end of the race. He labelled it very, very dangerous. He was understandably frustrated and worried because you're coming to the likes now of Spa-Francorchamps. You have to have confidence in your car. And I don't think Verstappen has that at the moment with Red Bull. And I don't think it's going to be a very, very happy place for Verstappen as he arrives at what is essentially a home race for him. Of course, being half Belgian and born in Belgium, of course.
And are we judging Max Verstappen's season based on your average F1 driver, or are we judging it based on a Max Verstappen? You know what I'm talking about. Are our expectations always going to be sky high for Verstappen?
Well, I think we can only judge him based on the standards he holds himself to. And Verstappen, for the likes of a four-time world champion, fighting for a third and fourth place at best is not where a driver of his caliber should be. How patient is he? That's a difficult one to answer. There's all sorts of speculation about his future at the moment, where he might be going, whether he's lost faith in Red Bull. But like I said, there is that reliability factor now in the back of his head. He knows he's had two rear wing issues in the last two race weekends. Regardless of the outright potential in terms of lap time, he's now in a situation where when he turns into a corner, does he have confidence that it's going to stick? Right now, I don't think he has that confidence. So this is not a track that you want to be driving around with no confidence. So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of Max Verstappen shows up this weekend. Is it the usual fiery, feisty Max, or is it someone who I think is reconsidering his future with his team?
So Thomas, we're talking about reconsidering his future. We're talking about confidence and patience, and that is so important. Where do you think Max's head is? And as we are entering a summer break shortly, do you think it's going to be quiet? Do you think it's going to be a silly season? Do you think we could be having some crazy Max news coming out anytime soon?
That very much depends on who you talk to in the paddock. I've had multiple sources tell me, yes, Max is done. Max is going elsewhere. McLaren is the leading possibility that I've been hearing. There's obviously the potential of Mercedes still there in the background, although I think that has very much faded in the last couple of months, because unlike last year, Mercedes don't need Max Verstappen anymore. Last year, I think they were unsure of Kimi Antonelli's potential. They were unsure of whether George Russell has what it takes to lead a team. This year, I think they know now Antonelli is their answer to Verstappen. He's only 19 years old. He's producing the goods weekend in, weekend out. And as a result, I don't think Max Verstappen is essential to Toto Wolff's plans anymore. And that's why we're getting these stories, obviously unconfirmed stories, but stories that are swirling nevertheless, that Verstappen has been offered low-ball contract figures for if he wants to. You can drive for us, but we're not going to pay you what you're getting at Red Bull at the moment. I think what I'm hearing is that Verstappen is trying to get out of Red Bull. He's trying to find a seat elsewhere. And the pervasive rumour that refuses to go away is McLaren. And this is what has been interesting over the last couple of weeks, because obviously they've got Lando Norris, they've got Oscar Piastri, Zach Brown. I asked Zach Brown this in the press conference at Silverstone 2 weeks ago about what McLaren could offer Max Verstappen if he is shopping around. And Zach pretty much shut it down. He said, what I couldn't offer him was a seat in my team, in one of my race cars. But it is interesting that no matter who you speak to in the paddock, this rumour refuses to go away, that Max is negotiating with McLaren, that there are ongoing conversations between Zach Brown and Max Verstappen's camp, and that, you know, I don't know if you saw, but in the last week, Oscar Piastri's manager, Mark Webber, came out and shut down the possibility that Oscar wants to go anywhere, or he has a contract for next year, and there's absolutely no danger. This is all standard stuff in the art of negotiations, because at the end of the day, no one's ever going to say about a contracted driver, yes, I'm looking elsewhere, yes, I'm talking to Max Verstappen, and yes, we will happily walk away from McLaren if another driver is signed. So the positions have been made clear in what I believe is a chess match of a negotiation. Oscar Piastri is not going to leave McLaren without a fight. Zach Brown possibly is negotiating with Max Verstappen, because at the end of the day, if you have the chance to be associated with the Verstappen brand across McLaren as a brand, which of course is not just Formula One, but it's also WEC, the hypercar class at Le Mans next year. If you have the chance to be associated with Max Verstappen, as accomplished and as good as Oscar Piastri is, I don't believe Zach Brown would be so short-sighted as to go, you know what, I'm going to say no to Max Verstappen in favour of the relatively unproven Oscar Piastri, who we have to remember did squander a 35-point lead in the championship last year. That's not a position I believe Max Verstappen would have squandered. And I think Zach Brown would be thinking in the back of his mind, I have the possibility of upgrading my driver lineup. And if that involves annoying or possibly falling out with an Australian driver, I think Zach Brown would do it. So it's going to be interesting to see how this develops. And I'm sure there will be plenty of questions, especially over this weekend, for Max Verstappen and the McLaren management as well, Andrea Stella and Zak Brown.
Because McLaren are in an interesting position. I was at Goodwood over the weekend and you had Lando Norris speaking from the balcony alongside Andrea Stella there, talking about wanting to ensure that McLaren over the next kind of few months as we finish out this Formula One season are getting back to a position that they were last year. And it does seem that Oscar Piastri has been quite invisible this season. He's one place above Verstappen in the constructors, but it doesn't seem like he's had any sort of high highs. He's had a few low lows at the beginning of this season. So I'm not surprised that these rumours are swirling. I want to ask, though, would there be any kind of possibility of Verstappen becoming involved with McLaren outside of F1, in some of their other interests, whether that be endurance racing, whether that be in the States? He's tried other sorts of racing this year. Is that something he'd be interested in?
I'm less inclined to believe the US side of things, because he has shut down the idea of doing ovals and IndyCar in the past. So I don't believe he'd go down that route. What does really seem to appeal to Max is the endurance racing side of things. And we obviously saw him take part in the Nürburgring 24 Hours in May in a Mercedes AMG GT3 car. But McLaren is entering the world of top-level endurance racing with its hypercar class as of next year. There's rumours that they might even become an engine manufacturer. I think that's a long way off, but there is the suggestion that they won't necessarily remain a customer team, because they are, of course, a Mercedes customer team in Formula One at the moment. But I think McLaren as a brand is something Max is potentially tempted by. And actually, I was amused by something Max put up on Twitter only last week. He put up a post saying, back in orange next week. And of course, that can be construed in a number of different ways. But I think it is just that little bit of game playing, I think, that is going on regarding these potential negotiations. Because yes, we associate Max with Red Bull. Yes, he's been there 10 years and he has a lot of freedom. But Red Bull, we are hearing a lot of loyalty to the brand, that apparently Red Bull is not happy about the level of loyalty that Max is showing to Red Bull. But we have to think in terms of personnel. All the people that Max would have grown up with at Red Bull and all the people he would have worked with throughout his championship victories, they're all pretty much gone now. Christian Horner is gone. Rob Marshall is gone. Adrian Newey's gone. You name them, they're pretty much gone. And that includes the likes of, say, Paul Monaghan, that we're hearing in recent weeks is gone to Cadillac, one of the chief engineers of the team. So I think in terms of the loyalty, is Max really loyal to the new management of Red Bull that's only been in place for the last 2 or 3 years? I find that hard to believe. And I think if there is a point at which Max wants to jump across to another prestigious team, of which McLaren are the second oldest Formula One team on the grid. They are a team that know how to win. They beat them in the championship last year. There are the opportunities to race in other categories. I think if the deal is right, and the finances can be worked out and the freedom aspect can be worked out, because Max does have that incredible amount of freedom with Red Bull, I see no reason why Max wouldn't go, you know what, maybe for the last few years of my career, maybe McLaren is the place that makes sense to me. So I wouldn't be surprised to see it happen.
And if we're to look into the more immediate future, we have Spa this weekend. In a few words, who do you think is going to win? What do you predict?
I think it's coming down to very much Mercedes versus Ferrari at this stage. I've been very impressed by what we're seeing from Ferrari over the last couple of races. Simply because, and this is probably getting into the granularity of the regulations, but it's all down to the ADUO safety net that was introduced on the engine side of the equation. So what we're hearing is that Ferrari basically built, really concentrated on the chassis, the aero, and getting the electrical side of the engine correct, so that when the FIA's ADO benchmarking kicked in, Ferrari were awarded upgrade opportunities, upgrade tokens, essentially, on the combustion engine side. They introduced that new combustion engine upgrade in Austria. And yes, we didn't see much of a jump in performance in Austria, but we really did at Silverstone. And Silverstone is a power-hungry track. And yet Ferrari were right on the pace with Mercedes. There's been the suggestion that Mercedes have had to restart development of the W17. They were looking ahead to next year already, but now that they've seen how close and how ferocious Ferrari's development has been, that Mercedes have kind of had to go, we need to get back in gear here, restart development and refocus here, or we're going to be overtaken by Ferrari. So Spa is probably one of the most power-hungry circuits on the calendar now, and I would suspect it's going to be a case of engine power around this track. Energy management is going to be key around Spa-Francorchamps this weekend. Precious few recharge zones around this 7 kilometer track. So it's going to be very interesting to see what Ferrari can do. I think if Ferrari can bring the battle to Mercedes here, I think they can do it pretty much anywhere across the second half of the season, because we've seen this chassis is potent. But we've also seen from a Mercedes perspective, they've been consistent pretty much across the board. They've got good engine power. They also have an ADUO upgrade in their pocket that they haven't used yet. And as we saw at Monaco, a track that doesn't require engine power but does require good chassis agility, Kimi Antonelli ran away with that race. So Mercedes, I would say, are still the best all-rounder, but they've got to be looking over their shoulder very closely at what is becoming a very impressive resurgent Ferrari. And I think it's only going to come down to these two teams in the second half of the championship. I think McLaren, as a customer team, they haven't quite got everything figured out, particularly on... They're quite open about the fact they're 2 to 3 months behind on chassis development, and they're also behind on understanding the Mercedes power unit. And Red Bull, I won't use the word mess, because I think that's it's too strong a word to label Red Bull a mess, but they're just not quite at championship level. They're not even at race winning level, I think, at the moment. So I think it's going to be McLaren and Red Bull kind of struggling to achieve the kind of third place on the podium or lower, but battling for those two top spots, it's going to be Ferrari and Mercedes.
That's what's going to make the second half of the season, I think, so exciting for the teams, also for the fans.
I'm so excited.
Listen, Thomas, thank you so much. We have to let you go for today, but that was fantastic. And hopefully we'll get to chat to you again throughout the course of this season.
Thank you so much.
So the F1 pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by KitKat, ringing breaks of the fastest sport in the world. Hashtag have a break. Thanks very much. And we'll chat to you next week.
The Formula One pod on Off the Ball, brought to you by KitKat. Hit pause, have a break,
have a KitKat.